come stop and take a trip down on my block, where you see hidden potential, young minds sharper than pencil, and ain't afraid to speak their mind if they got something against you. We standing with you, we tackle issues like civic pride. Hate will cease to exist, just put our differences aside. From my side to your side, from Dutch Town to South Side, from Penrose to North Side, from Benton Park to Old North, to West End to West Side. We blessed when we step out, we stand down, rise up, stand together, wise up.
This is Stitchcast Studio, produced by St. Louis Story Stitchers in St. Louis, Missouri.
In episode 11, youth leaders discuss causes, consequences, and ways to end racism in America. Let's check it out.
They say who that, but you already knew that. That beat them story stitches, story stitches, story stitches, story stitches.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Stitchcast Studio. Today I'm here with some alumni youth leaders from St. Louis Story Stitchers. Thank you all for coming again today to share, you know, your opinions and your knowledge on today's topics. So we've seen a lot going on, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, with the protests and the riots. So I think my first question to you all would be, what was your first reaction to the protests and the riots, or even the events that led up to the protest and the riots? Like, what were you all's thoughts, you know? And even now, like, how do you feel now? Like, what's different?
At first, I was excited, because I was like, somebody's doing something. And then eventually, I saw how, like, the burning of, like, buildings and stuff like that, and then specifically how they were targeting everybody, so, like, even Black businesses weren't safe. I was like, dang, we were rioting and protesting for one thing. So that was, I was, like, mixed emotions. I was, like, happy that we're doing something, but then again, I'm like, we're still hurting each other.
Definitely.
Yeah, I just was seeing so much controversy on my social media feed, a mixture of people that I know and people at a distance, which was kind of concerning at times. And I think I was like glad that there are people protesting and glad that there was outrage towards it. But I was also like, what are we gonna do next? Like, what's the, after this is passed as a trend, like what's the next goal?
For sure. I would piggyback off of that too. Like, the social media part definitely did make you face like what was happening. And I had a multitude of friends that were just like, I'm taking a break. I gotta get off of social media now.
I definitely related to the part where I had to take a lot of breaks. It felt like a lot of information was being, it was good to see it getting out there, but it also felt kind of like a lot of people were retweeting it and reblogging it for their own like personal gain, like not for the informational part. So it was definitely like a very odd time on the internet, and it still is.
That's real. I definitely felt the same way. Definitely information overload. But at the same time, it was expected. You can't deny a group of people's reaction to a life taken, but not only a life taken, but I felt like during that time, every day there was a new name to be said. And then on top of that, each time there was new footage, it would be like, as soon as you refresh, it was right there. Refresh, something new, refresh, something new. So it's expected, but really, how do we be more effective? Probably was also another thing going through my head during that time too.
Yeah, for sure. So with all that being said, you know, how did you all deal with, you know, the overloads and just feeling kind of overwhelmed with social media? Or maybe like, you know, you had friends that didn't react the way you thought they should have reacted. How did you all deal with that, you know?
For me, it came at like different ways. Like, everyone know me as a vocal person. So when this, everything started happening, they looked towards me like, what she's gonna say, what she's gonna do. So of course I got into a lot of, I don't want to call them debates. I just want to call them like conversations. We had just had our disagreements and stuff like that. So that came in waves. And then after I got off social media, I just have, like, especially for my male friend, it's like a lot of late night calls because they're like, I'm terrified from coming from work to home or going home from work. So it's just a lot of encouragement, especially to all my Black friends, encouragement and explanation to some of my white friends who don't know what's going on. But I guess it's a lot of conversations, and instead of like reactions, like making posts, being angry about everything, I just rather have conversations.
Definitely. And sometimes those things can be looked at as small things, but really make the most impact. So yeah, I'm pretty sure your friends appreciate you for that.
I agree about like relaying information to like other races that, you know, wouldn't exactly understand from our point of view, but they're still trying. I did a lot of that, and I also made sure that I relay information to like older generations, like my parents and like her friends, because our version of the news, what we see like on social media, is way different from their version, like what they see on Fox 2 or whatever. So like I definitely wanted to make sure that I stuck with like facts that I knew to be true, and had to just reiterate how easily different stories can get warped and messed up.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely relate to that, just because, you know, I'm social media heavy. And my mom is like news person. Like, she's on social media, but like she watches the news, you know? So at times I did feel it, you know, kind of hard to explain how I was feeling. But I can say, you know, having her there, like how she was there for her friends, like my mom was there for me to just let me be open and, you know, just supporting me like with the way I was feeling, you know, even if she didn't fully understand. And sometimes I could see that she didn't fully understand, but that she felt the hurt, you know, and the passion. So yeah, I definitely can relate to that a whole bunch. Anybody else had anything about that one?
Just at first, a feeling of numbness, like, it reminded me of years past of dealing with the same type of issues.
For me, I during that time, I started low-key to educate myself on like the past, just to, you know, we see what's blatantly in our face, but when it comes to, I guess a way to say it would be to know the plays that are being made from the past, like,
yeah.
I don't know, I feel like it can be very cringy looking at the past of the United States, but I felt like I was willing to get uncomfortable just to know what the reality is, so that, you know, we can move forward knowing their tactics, but having kind of like a rebuttal or like blocking it because we know. So I did a lot of just research from there.
That's dope. I was gonna say too, because Josh touched on it, you know, about being numb, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why I cried so hard, you know, was because, you know, watching the first video that day, seeing that lady like say like, if you don't get your camera off me, I'm gonna call the cops and tell them that a Black man is harassing me, you know, like, I just kind of like looked at her and shook my head and kind of like blew past it, you know. And it took something like really, you know, drastic to kind of like make me stop and be like, is this really what we live in? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so how do we move forward, you know? And as of right now, really, I don't think there is a wrong answer to that, you know. How do we move forward? Like, what does that look like to you as young people? For like you or your family or your community, you know, what are some things you all think that we could start to do to try to move and push forward even more?
I always think of moving forward as knowledge. I think that ignorance holds a lot of people back, especially how race is revolved around biases and stereotypes. I feel like a lot of those things could be eradicated if we just knew more about each other and we understood a lot more about each other. So knowledge for me would be a way of moving forward.
Yeah, or even if we, not even if we just knew more, but if we actually like took the time and like the effort, you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, it's not like we can't know more about each other. It's just sometimes it's like, do we really care? And I think that's what another place we can start is just really looking at ourselves, like, do I care? And if not, like, why not? And if so, like, how can I, what can I do with this, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess, like, educating yourself, educating people around you, and also be willing to learn about others' like differences, you know what I'm saying? Learn about the opposing side, I guess, how they feel and why they feel like that, so you won't be stuck in like your own social bubble. Because if we all just stick with the same people we agree with all day, you're never gonna get nothing done. And then also be willing to change, have like an open mindset, be ready to become a leader or a follower.
Yeah, what you just said, and because it's kind of going with what Anna said, made me think about that video that went viral from that song, I'm Not Racist, you know, with the white guy and the black guy kind of going back and forth with each other. I don't know, it just kind of reminded me of it. I would encourage y'all to watch it. It was very interesting. And of course, it's all coming from a black guy. You know, he rapped about it, but he was going from two different perspectives. So yeah, anybody
was
else?
Joyner Lucas?
Yeah, Joyner Lucas, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
I would just add just all of us holding ourselves accountable, like for our actions. Yeah, just in life in general, just holding ourselves accountable.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I was gonna say, and I hope this isn't too personal, but you know, how do you all, you know, like we said a little bit earlier, a lot of this, basically all of it, stems from, you know, racism, like the police brutality, the color of people's skin somehow makes it okay to dislike them or count them out. So my question would be, how do you all deal with racism or racist acts? How do you kind of maneuver, you know, through it, if you've ever experienced it? Because I know that's a hard thing and a hard thing to talk about sometimes.
I think for me, I mean, it's easy to like lie and say I work with people through it. But for me, I think I'm a conflict avoidant person. So when somebody like would treat me in that way, I just would be quiet or would not deal with it right away. And so it would just, all these issues would build up to a point of like, I mean, just extreme emotional pain. So for me, I think the tendency has been to just work hard and avoid dealing with it. And I've noticed it even in my dad, to be honest, like similar personalities about how to avoid dealing with conflict or dealing with really hard subjects. You just work hard to try and make it through.
Yeah, for sure.
In the past, one example for me, it was at an airport. I was coming back from out of the country, and we landed in Miami. That's the international airport. And because Miami, speaking Spanish there is pretty much a norm, because Miami, they're pretty much Latinos. So I saw this guy, he was like an airport official or something, and he looked, and I just assumed to speak to him in Spanish, but turns out he was just a white guy. And he was like, whoa, hold on there, sir, man, we're in America, you gotta speak English. And then I switched to English so quick, I was like, relax. And then I tried to ask my question again, but that comment had already been, I don't know, that's very insensitive, I felt. I mean, that's like, that's what people who have a certain mentality think. Like, we only speak English here. Like, that's not true. So my mom overheard me like low-key start to get into an argument with this dude. And then my mom is the type to not want to ruffle anybody's feathers, especially if it's like a white person or a person of power or authority. But at some point he wanted me to apologize, and my mom was apologizing for me, and I told him, no, we don't have to apologize for anything. And I kind of just matched his energy, but at the same time kind of mirrored his nasty attitude towards him and just kind of just stormed away. And then in other situations, like in places of employment, there was a time where I was talking about my goals to like an old white man in like his 70s. And I was telling him about my aspirations and my goals for real estate. I was telling him about I wanted to have X amount of properties, X amount of cars, X amount of whatever, whatever. He was like, like that concept of me looking the way I look, having and accomplishing all those things to him was basically like, keep dreaming. And when it comes to those like subtle like jabs, the best way I've been able to handle it, I basically left, and that impacts their pockets, and they don't like when their pockets are hurt. So that's the best way. So that's how I handled it.
For sure, for sure. I agree with that strategy. Very much so.
Being like the vocal person I am, I was raised into like a pro-black house, so it was all about Black Panther, like very black liberal, I guess you could say like that. So when I have those encounters, I usually like just snap, just like without hesitating or whatever people say about me. But as I got older, I'm like, dang, I'm really the angry black woman. I'm really fulfilling that stereotype. But it's like, that's not my intention, because I want to get a point across. But once I started doing schooling and taking courses, especially in my high school, about like how to handle certain things, once I go out in public and I talk to people, I'm like, okay, this is how I diffuse the situation. This is how I talk to people. This is how I handle this type of thing. And it's just like, I hate that I have to change on my part because somebody else is being ignorant, but I have to do that in order to get my point across. I might have to talk extra proper in order for these corporate people to understand me so I can get a job. It's like little things that used to trigger me. Now I'm just like, okay, I'm just gonna blow it over, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You know, we're trained to talk in our white voice, quotation marks. And that's a real thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's called code switching, but you know what I'm saying? Like, we know what it is. Like how you're saying, you feel like you gotta kind of switch it up. And I mean, it's okay too, you know, cause I understand that, you know, being at work is different from talking to my friend, you know, but I feel like to a certain extent, we should be able to be ourselves, you know, when it crosses lines of like how I wear my hair. I'm just gonna find another job. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all good.
Hey, what's up, everybody? You know what time it is. It's time for another StitchCast Studio Arts Interlude. That's right. It's time to pick the city up. This week, we have a Story Stitch's original poem entitled Politician. Let's take a listen.
I'm not a politician. I'm an inner city kid. We don't love where I'm from, but I remember when we did. No love and no trust is just the way I gotta live, and the way that I gotta live is the way that can get me killed. It's crazy how your people wanna kill me. My people wanna kill me. So I gotta stay aggressive, cause I'll never let them kill me. 19 years in hell, the new me is the real me. Ain't never felt my pain, so ain't no way that you can feel me. My freedom got a price, and I refuse to let them deal me. Gotta stay aligned, can't let them move me, can't let them tilt me. It's snakes up in the grass, I'm down and dirty, getting filthy, cause these snakes can never murder me. My soul is for eternity, it's burglary how they take my name. I refuse to medicate to go and ease the pain. I'm in the streets all on my own, that's why I need the name. And that's my rocks, that's the reason I won't lead a game. My sweaty stuff can never change, my role model vision getting weak now. Need to see a brother that the system couldn't keep down. People around the corner, now you caught up in these streets now. But to pick somebody up, then that means you gotta reach down, and they telling me to preach now. These ain't the words of the wise, these the words of I seen it with my eyes. A lot of violence, a lot of people losing lives, cause everybody got a gun and everybody's gotta die. They selling me a dream called freedom, deleting us as people. They lie when they say slavery was illegal. They flood my neighborhood with guns and drugs and all the other modern evils, and they hate to see us recognized as people. America, I don't need you.
You know, and with us kind of talking along these lines, and this is a big question, like a personal question that I have too. Is racism a problem that you all think can be solved or that will be solved?
I think that there's always going to be a sort of ism. So, for example, if racism is solved and, you know, we're all together or whatever, I think that there's still going to be prejudices and isms within, like, our own community, like there is now. So, like, for example, dark skin, black people will always be more mistreated than light skinned people in like any sort of like race or whatever. So I feel like there's always going to be that sort of thing, along with like socio and economics and money. There's always going to be somebody over somebody that looks down on somebody.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And me personally, I think there will always be like something like classism, you know. But I really hope and pray that we could come to love ourselves enough that we're able to fully love others just the way they are, you know. And I'm speaking like, let's not even think about the money aspect, just the human being, like, you know what I'm saying, like outside of the skin, the color of their skin, like, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, there will always be differences talked about because your ethnicity, you know, and different things like that. And I'm really hoping that one day, you know, like, even if it's not in our generation, but like in our kids or in our grandkids or great grandkids, like, I just hope one day that we as humans will be able to heal enough to love ourselves first and then to be able to love those around us, you know, fully in a larger capacity. Because Man, like, you know, I just don't want to keep dealing with it. You know, me personally, I feel like, why should we settle for it? Like, you know, like, why are we settling for it and why have we settled for it? But that's just my thoughts about it. Anybody else?
For me, once you take like the economic and like the social class out of racism, like you said, we have to teach each other how to love. But once again, within our own community, we still have ism. You know, we have the colorism and also like misogyny and stuff like that. So it's always going to be a problem. Like, long as we have hierarchy, especially in this country, that's how I feel. Because people at the top or who think they're at the top will always find ways to bring the bottom down even lower. But in order for this country to run, we have a hierarchy. Racism, it's always going to be taught somewhere. Even if you get rid of it completely, we're still going to have to learn about it in history books, and people are still going to have like questions like, why did we stop, or why can't we continue? I guess as individuals, we get more curious each year. So if we do get rid of it and we teach it in schools, it's just going to be a cycle of why and why not.
That's good. That's good.
Man, optimistically, I want to say yes, but it probably wouldn't be in our lifetime. And then two, I'm saying no, because until the system that this country, and not only this country, but throughout the globe, it's a system at the end of the day. It's a mindset. And for some, it's a culture. And for those who are so devoted to their beliefs, there's no way you can skew them unless, I mean, you really, really sit them down. But even with that, like, I just don't think it would end in our lifetime, unfortunately. But we would be able to reform the system because, you know, as a collective country, I'm sure we would outgrow the current way of life. But there's always going to be that darkness. There's no light without dark, unfortunately.
That was good. That was good. I felt like, you know, like this hierarchy, you know, like it's always this opposing force trying to duke it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, but yeah. I'm hopeful too that, you know, if we don't see it in our lifetime, that maybe my grandkids or my great grandkids might be able to, you know, reap the benefits of the action steps that we're taking right now. So I want to ask, like, because we hear, I'm pretty sure you all have heard these two sayings multiple times. And one is defund the police, and two, Black Lives Matter. And I want to know, you know, when you all say those things or when you hear those phrases, like, what does that mean to you?
It's funny because, like, it always changes depending on the person. Like, some people are really like, let's just dismantle this and build something new. Or some people are like, we just should funnel resources from the police. I mean, I think it's an understatement to say that, like, police are overfunded and they're undertrained to deal with those situations. Like, those I fully agree with. But I don't know to what degree I would, like, agree with. How far do you take it? Like, I don't trust law enforcement that much. Like, I don't have a lot of faith in them to really protect me or my family anyway. So I wouldn't be like super upset if they just told me police are done, like no more. I don't know what's really the right decision in this instance. Like, how do we deal with this? Or is it able to be reformed? Or what steps do you take if that's the case?
Yeah, that's good. For me, defunding the police means allocating or like putting that money towards things that could have more money invested in so that they could work better. For example, you know, schools and hospitals and things of that nature.
Definitely. As you all were talking, you know, I started thinking about the magnitude of you all's answers, you know, could be a breakthrough for somebody who's listening to this, you know what I'm saying? Because they could have no idea at all what these things mean. And I know that's kind of hard to imagine with the world that we live in, with the technology we have, but it is the truth that some people are not in the know. Sometimes it's because they don't want to know, and sometimes it's, you know, not intentionally. So yeah, I think these answers are great.
From the posts I've seen and conversations that I have, it's just like a power shift, you know? Because, you know, money is power in this country. Giving that power to teachers, giving the power to health resources or human resources as well, you know? Because I feel like a lot of people are more comfortable. If you know your neighbor, you're more comfortable with your neighbor helping you out or telling you what's going on in your house when you're on vacation or something, then the police, you know, just because a lot of people don't trust the police. When you're young, especially, I know in my family, we taught young, like, the police is not going to do nothing. Like, they're not going to help you. They come super slow in black neighborhoods, but you go to a white neighborhood, they're ASAP. And we'd rather trust our friend or our next door neighbor we grew up with than the police.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
For the defunding the police part, I feel like the United States is definitely conscious of how big of a monster they are. So they stick to their guns because they just know that with everything they've done, that if somebody were to try them, they would be like, "You really want to try me?" Like, they aren't nothing without their guns. And then as far as what Black Lives Matter, what it means, for me, when I see it, it's kind of like this nation always wants to sweep these things under the rug and to think that anybody would think anybody's life is disposable. Having to remind the world about it, it's unfortunate, but it's that elephant in the room that has to be said. This has to be said, because it seems like the people behind the badges, the people in power, aren't getting it. And it's mainly because, like, you know who your community is and you coexist with all these people, but for somebody who's never even had a conversation with a person of color, they can't really feel any empathy because they just can't, there's no relation. It doesn't connect in their head. On top of the culture that they already built, it's just the elephant in the room. They don't want to see what they did. So they kind of have to suppress it and silence it, but it's not working.
Yeah.
So we're pulling their card.
Yeah. I would say for me, the Black Lives Matter, you know, when I hear it, when I see it, it just reminds me of like a cry for help in a way, like a genuine cry for help. But then again, on the other side too, it makes me feel like, you know, what it is, a movement, and the injustices that, you know, people of color face on a daily basis, you know, so kind of like a revolutionary cry for help. Like, you know, so it's like a mixed thing for me. So yeah, but how do you all as young people plan to reshape the paradigm of your community and even for your family too, like your family and your community?
For me, I always want to invest, especially how much they invested in me, you know, music. Got a full-blown studio now, so I want to invest back into my family, teach them things that I'm learning throughout the way, you know, how to look at stocks, how to make your own stores, start your own business, renovate houses, you know, invest back into my family And I know how my family is. We're loving people. I know they're going to give back. So it's just like a domino effect. They're going to help the community, especially we own a church and we're just a type of family that we go out to the community before COVID. We have clothing drives every weekend. We give out food every weekend. So I know if I teach my family's going to teach the community.
For sure. For sure. I can definitely relate, especially with the, you know, being a family person.
Like, just being a bridge between different people groups and communities, for me, that would be, like, one huge way to give back and provide opportunities for other people in the neighborhoods that I've grown up in.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say unlearn and relearn. And by doing that, it'll restructure what our priorities for a family and a community, how to leverage the financial aspects of this environment, meaning how to leverage and distribute and be self-sustainable with currency as far as credit or investments or, you know, interest and compounding, like when your money makes money just because of you putting it to work.
Definitely. So y'all did kind of touch on something else I was going to ask. So I guess my next final question would be, you know, I always like to kind of end on a high note. What would you say to someone who is kind of losing hope in our society in today's world? You know, like, what would you say? How would you lift them up, you know?
That's an interesting question because, to be honest, like, I was that kid at one point. Like, I was cynical of everything, was not impressed, and was just super, at one point, was extremely depressed because of all these issues. And so I don't know, like, the proper way to answer it, but just to persevere through suffering, like, to just go through it and to succeed in spite of all the things that you're dealing with, and not to use any of these issues we mentioned, like, as an excuse to not accomplish, but to use it as a means to persevere and to inspire other people.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, half of me is like, okay, and what, like, how am I going to get through this? But the other half of me is like, this is the time to find information, learn about what's going on, because history repeats itself. So the best way to stop history is to learn about it, you know, like, get information. And if it's becoming overwhelming, take those social media breaks, take those days off, read a book, keep your mind off of it.
When it comes to somebody losing hope or faith, one of the best things I could suggest is seeing what kind of value you have, no matter how big or how small it is. But for one to be of use, I know there's a bad connotation when people are like, oh, you used me, or I'm being used. If you can use it as your leverage, like, if you are useful, that means you are of value and you see yourself being a factor of change or having purpose. So I feel like the best thing to do would be to know what you could be used for, like what vehicle you are, and to push out as much value as you can. Because if you aren't useful, unfortunately, you could be useless. So that really it really has to tap in on how you think about yourself, your self-image.
I guess what I would say is really just don't stop looking at the light. Like, don't lose focus. Like, don't lose your hope, because there's always going to be adversity around you. But the good thing is we get to choose how we react to it. And I read something the other day that talked about really a lot of the stress comes from how we react to these things, you know, just kind of understanding yourself, like getting to know yourself and not letting these things around you suck your energy away from you. Like, don't lose focus. Don't lose sight of your light, of your hope.
I would definitely say to question everything. So, like, don't believe the first thing that you read. Don't believe the first thing that you see or hear. You know, do your own research, you know, figure out what you think is the truth.
Thank you for listening. And last but not least, we want to give a very special shout out to the Stitchcast Studio sponsors. the City of St. Louis Youth At-Risk Crime Prevention Grant of 2020, Stewart Family Foundation, Spirit of St. Louis Women's Fund, and Missouri Foundation for Health. To learn more, visit storystitchers.org.
They say who that, but you already knew that. That beat them story stitches. Story stitches, story stitches, story stitches, story stitches.